It always comes back round to Man United. What's the weather like today? Yeah, it's sunny, but United ain't doing well, are they?
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Spurs versus Newcastle United. Live from Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
On Off the Ball.
With William Hill. Bringing you an epic weekend of Premier League football. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. Shane Hannan with you through until 5 p.m. this evening. It is time for Football Saturday. We have Keith Tracy, the former Irish international, in studio with myself. Johnny Ward will be here shortly as well. Keith, good afternoon.
How are you, Shane? You okay?
Keep well. Thanks for coming in. And we have former Irish international striker David Connolly on the line as well. Afternoon, David.
Afternoon, boys. Hope you're well.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us. It's busy afternoons football. We're keeping tabs on Manchester United versus Bournemouth, which is 4 minutes in at Old Trafford, 0-0 so far. The team news from Old Trafford for that one, quite interesting, as has been the team news generally from Erik ten Hag of late. Andre Onana in goals, the back four of Diogo Dalot, Harry Maguire, Luke Shaw partnering Maguire in centre half, of course, and Sergio Reguilón. Scott McTominay, the man of the hour, and Sofyan Amrabat sitting for United. You have Anthony out right, Alejandro Garnacho out left, and Bruno Fernandes bossing the middle, or trying to boss the middle behind Anthony Martial, the bench for United. Well, Marcus Rashford, I guess, is the headline there. Rasmus Højlund on the bench as well for Manchester United today. Rafael Varane, Facundo Pellistri, Aaron Wan-Bissaka, Donny van de Beek, Johnny Evans, and Kobbie Mainoo on the bench. And Bournemouth have scored. 5 minutes in at Old Trafford, Manchester United 0, Bournemouth 1. Was it Dominic Solanke?
I think it's Solanke. Solanke are billing now. Solanke puts it in, but it's United, you know, trying to play out from the back. They get caught and they get it across the pitch. I think it's Tavernier just puts it across the box. It's an easy enough finish, but United, the architects of their own downfall there.
At Old Trafford as well, after that win over Chelsea midweek, the 2-1 win where they looked a little bit better. So Amrabat plays it out to Reguilón. Looked like it left back.
I think
back.
That's Fernandes.
Was it Fernandes?
Bruno Fernandes, yeah.
McTominay was caught out in the middle. Ball played across. A lovely finish. Striker's finish from Dominic Solanke. A little flick finish from the cross. Took it really well. Not much Onana could have done possibly to block it. But yeah, it looked like Bruno Fernandes' ball to Scott McTominay, who wasn't fully expecting the ball to come to him. And really, the worst possible start for Erik ten Hag and Manchester United. I mean, he needs to win, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's it's really, really poor. You know, the opening couple of minutes of a game when Bournemouth are coming to town as Manchester United, I'm sure Erik ten Hag would be saying, pile up the pressure, don't let them feel comfortable, don't let them grow into the game, and all of a sudden they've nicked the ball. It's that pass into the midfield from Bruno Fernandes is nonsensical for
hospital
me.
Hospital ball.
It's a 50-50 ball. Even if McTominay is on his toes, it's a fighting ball. So for me, you play a little bit more sensical in the opening exchanges of the game. You feel your way into it. To be doing that sort of stuff, you're captain. I just don't understand it. And all of a sudden now, United are on the back foot.
Yeah. David Connolly, fraught with danger, is playing out from the back.
But look, credit to Bournemouth, right? Because, I mean, they've been in really good form. So, there's a long, long way to go. I mean, we saw today with Liverpool going down. It wouldn't surprise me if they turn this around. Wouldn't surprise me at all, United.
Yeah, because they certainly looked a little bit better than they had during the week. Keith, Harry Maguire, Premier League Player of the Month. What a turnaround for the man.
Yeah, it's crazy, you know. A lot of people, I think it was the Scottish game when England played Scotland and he was getting a couple of jeers just coming off the bench. I thought that was really out of order, because at the heart of it, he's a lad who gives his all. He's never shied away from it. He's never, you know, as a player, sometimes you can exaggerate an injury and sort of say, well, I'm not available for this one. You can shy away from contests. But to be fair, Harry Maguire has never done that. He's always been available. He's always been at the forefront. And that can be easy to do when you're at a big club like Manchester, you know, you just go out and play. But when the chips are down, things are not going well, you know, the old Trafford faithful are getting on your back. He was always available, and largely he's done okay. You know, I know there's been a couple of mistakes here and there, you know, the odd OG, that's not really his fault, but a couple of the odd deflections, but largely for England been very, very good, and I think he can hold his head up high. He's been really good, and you know, although United's performances haven't been brilliant, they are getting points on the board.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, I didn't give people the Bournemouth team as well, in case they're interested as well. So the Bournemouth lineup: Neto in goals, you've back four of Adam Smith, Ilya Zabarni, Marcos Senesi and Milos Kerkez, Ryan Christie and Lewis Cook sitting, you've Antoine Semenyo, Justin Kluivert and Marcus Tavernier behind the goal scorer Dominic Solanke, who opened the scoring for Bournemouth in that game on 5 minutes. The other big team news, I guess, from the 3 o'clock kickoffs is Evan Ferguson leads the line for Brighton in their home match against Burnley at the Amex Stadium. 0-0 still after 8 minutes, and that one good save there. A chance for Manchester United to equalise. Was it Harry Maguire?
It was
Harry Maguire, yeah.
Yeah, so cross in and the big man almost equalises for Manchester United, not to be. They've had a bit of the attacking and a lot of the ball, and it was a nicely won header, and the keeper had to tap it over, in fairness. Had to do it.
An awful indictment of football, just like the abuse that he's gotten, I think. It's like, I mean, it's not warranted at the best of times, but like, we've had David Myler on the show many times as a mate of of him. Good judge of character, I'd like to say. And like, always spoke about how he was a decent guy. I never, ever saw what he'd done to warrant the abuse he was getting on the terraces. And just because you're at a football ground, you know, don't forget that there are a lot of young people at the game as well who will see what you're doing and how you're behaving and jeering at a player. And I think it's a real measure of the man, as Keith says, that he's been able to recover to the extent that he has. And he's playing well. He really is playing well.
People spoke about how he would up his, you know, up the performances when he went on England duty, but considering the abuse he often got when he was with United, it's probably a relief for him to go off with the country.
Yeah, and exactly, with the way Gareth Southgate has dealt with him in the media, you know, keeping him in, keeping him around, and you know, I'm sure he's desperate to pay that back, and largely he has. And I remember when I think of Harry Maguire, he was a young lad coming into the Sheffield United team that I was on loan to, so he would pop in every now and then to train with the first team. And he hasn't really changed since then. He was a big, big lad. He wasn't quite as mobile as he is now back in the day. So when I look at him, I just look as a lad who gives everything. He's delighted to be at Manchester United. He was brilliant, really over the moon, the captain of the club. But, you know, some of the comments, as you say, have been absolutely, you know, too hard on him. And there is, you know, I think the thing that grated on people is that he was about to leave Manchester United. It seemed like he was waiting on the £8 million payoff so he could go out the door. And I think that may be grating on people. But his performances, by and large, have been absolutely okay. They've been fine for Manchester United in a struggling team where players are, you know, it's been called a graveyard for talent by Gary Neville over the last couple of months. For him to be still having a level of performance that, for me, has been acceptable, you know, it's just nonsensical, the stuff that's coming out.
I thought that Bruno Fernandes was very good against Chelsea, but he's not. Like, his captaincy has been questioned. Maguire is becoming a bit of a leader as well, in the sense that he's grown in confidence. You could just see there a couple of minutes ago spraying the ball into the edge of the box. Brilliant pass. And you can just see from his body language, and I suppose that expression that's often kind of memed a bit on social media, that he's actually, like, he just seems a lot happier in himself.
Yeah, he does, in fairness. Was he always, Keith, that, like, he obviously would have been disappointed, I'm sure, to lose the captaincy at Manchester United, but did he always have that vibe of someone who had leadership material?
Yeah, he did. Even as a young lad, when he would pop in, he would be quite shy in terms of having a chat with people. But when the ball would get knocked around, he would get involved. He would be in amongst it, and you could just tell that, you know, he was going to be comfortable at this level. So, yeah, it's brilliant. But look, I just sometimes when the captaincy come off him, you can think, which way is this going to go? His performances have been absolutely fine, and that's all you can really throw at a player. I know a lot of people have said, you know, you can't stand him on the halfway line, he can't do this and he can't do that, but there is an awful lot of stuff that he can do, and he is still a very, very good modern day centre half. So I think if he was to go to like a West Ham, or, you know, people he has been linked with before, somebody who plays a mid to low block, I think he could poke his head above water and come out as one of the best centre halves in the league again. Possibly standing on the halfway line, torn and running towards his own goal, probably doesn't highlight his best attributes, but he does do it for England from time to time. And he, like I say, by and large, been absolutely fine from him.
If you're tuning in, Man United are 1-0 down, by the way.
Yeah, just to repeat, Old Trafford, 12 minutes gone, Manchester United 0, Bournemouth 1, Dominic Solanke with the only goal. David, was that a thing that, you know, sometimes, and I speak about it with Harry Maguire, because often you saw him go to England duty and certainly used to play a lot better than he was at that bad period he had at Old Trafford. Was that something that in your own career, you know, if things weren't going right at club level, sometimes it was a relief to get to international duty where you could almost let the leash off a little bit?
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. I guess it just depends on how you value going away with your country, because some players value it a lot more than others, you know. And some will turn up with an injury and try to be fit, and others will maybe save themselves for club duty. But I think for Harry, it reminds me a little bit of maybe Jordan Henderson at Liverpool, where I guess their value is underappreciated maybe by, I don't know, the public or, you know, the armchair fan. Whereas when you're in the trenches in the dressing room with these sorts of characters, you know, because I played with lots of them, as I'm sure Keith would, who are really important to the harmony of the dressing room, keeping standards high, You know, you don't get to that level just by, you know, at the first sign of trouble, walking away and waving the white flag. You know, you have to dig in, and you don't become, you know, players of their standard. They were so valuable to a team by just, you know, giving up and, okay, I'm accepting my fate. Like, I think Jordan Henderson could have gone to Fulham at one point, you know, dug in and ended up, I think he's been the most decorated Liverpool captain. Mm. You know, Harry Maguire, he's playing right side centre back. I mean, you ask him, he'd probably rather play left side centre back, but he'll do a job for you, for the team. So, look, you know, ideally, if he had, I guess, you know, incredible pace, he would be able to play any sort of defensive line. But I reckon in a dressing room, I reckon, you know, you would want these sorts of lads absolutely beside you, you know, digging in the tough times. And he has had tough times, and it looks like he's coming out of them. So I'm pleased for him, because what you don't want is a manager, you know, for example, taking the captaincy off him. I've seen loads of managers come into clubs, could be foreign, could be whatever. They might have preconceived ideas. They might listen to, you know, the so-called noise from outside, what fans think, what past managers thought. You know, you just say, okay, make your own decision. Let's see what you're like. Take nothing on board. Take everyone for as they are, as you find them. And I thought it was a bit harsh to take it off him. But I'm pleased for him that he's back in the team anyway.
Yeah. To be fair to Man United as well, like I stand correct now, but they go level with Man City if they win today, I think. Yeah. Right? Which is absolutely bonkers. But like, if you think, what, four or five, maybe six games ago, I know they're on a good run, that dressing room was like that dressing room had to be under massive internal pressure, because like they were basically, because they're Man United, they were the biggest show in town, even though, like, if you looked at their sort of squad this season, you're like top four at best, you'd think. But because they're Man United, they're just under like unending scrutiny. And to be fair to people like Maguire, McTominay during the week, who were really maligned, like they've really stepped up the breach. And I think that's a kind of a good I suppose, example as well of Ten Hag's management, because like Keith would know this, a dressing room can just turn on the manager pretty quickly, and they haven't, like, in fairness to them.
Yeah, I'm not too sure. I think there is a couple of heads. I wouldn't say they're against the manager, but like I go back to the Sancho thing. I'm sure Sancho has
an outlier. Yeah,
he has a relationship with Rashford. Rashford isn't happy because of the way his mate's getting treated, and all of a sudden Rashford's performances have dipped. Martial doesn't seem to be on the same page as everybody else. Look, and when you look at the back four, like Diego Dallo. Yeah, he's not a bad right back. When you look at Reguilón playing left back, and then Luke Shaw and Harry Maguire, McTominay and Amrabat in front, it's okay, but it needs more of a shape. They need to be better drilled. It just seems a little bit all over the place in transition. And I know transition is the buzzword, but when United lose the ball, I don't think they're sprinting back into the positions they need to. And the difference between a Marcus Rashford and a Harry Maguire is Harry Maguire might come down levels every now and then in terms of his quality, but in terms of his work rate, it stays at a certain level. And you can accept that as a manager, as a coach. Harry Maguire comes off not having a great game, he still run 12 and a half kilometres, whatever it is these days in the Premier League. So you can't give out to him too much.
Yeah.
But Rashford doesn't seem to, you know, be trying, and Andy's levels are coming down. So the one thing for me, I always go back to, Sean Dyche said to me, if you give me 100%, you've taken everything away from me. I can't give out to you. You know, we all have off days on the ball. We all miscontrol it. We all play the wrong pass at certain times. But if your work rate stays to a certain standard, you're taking the manager's, you know, argument away from you. And that's what is grating on me with Rashford. Just his work rate, in terms of his quality, his talent, we all know it's there.
He's had an appalling season, like.
Again, if he's running all day long, you keep him in the team, and you say that will turn.
If he's not scoring goals, I think United fans will accept that to some degree, even though he is, you know, whatever, a striker or a wide man. But like if you're not putting in that effort, and some of the lack of effort from him in that you know, that recent game that he was, like, he's rightly dropped from the team. Anthony Martial, I'm surprised to see him in the team as well, considering his work rate doesn't tend to be through the roof. Like, you look at the likes of Scott McTominay there, David, for example, as well, who is clearly the man that is like, he's probably got captain material himself, McTominay, at some point, because he leads the way. He's been scoring goals and added that to his artillery as well. But even just from a work rate perspective, he's been brilliant.
I think Scott's a great fantastic player anyway. I mean, there's a lot of players I think get away with a fair bit, you know. I mean, Anthony, where do we start? I mean, we've talked about Anthony on this show so often, because I guess you might be blessed, like maybe say Damien Duff, right? Cutting in off the right-hand side, you know, Arjen Robben, those sorts of players who would be joining a club like United or a Chelsea or a City, or playing at the very, very, very highest level, making a difference. And let me tell you, Anthony is just not that. He's, you know, also Duffer could go down the line. Same with Ryan Robin, could use his right foot. I just don't see that from Anthony. So when you're paying that sort of money, and if Marcus's Rashford's form's dropping off, or Rasmus Højlund still hasn't got going, well, one of the other players has got to kind of take up the slack, and Anthony doesn't do that either. So I think that's why you have a degree of sympathy for some of the other players, maybe because you want those big name players, expensive players. He didn't put a price tag on it, Anthony, I know that. But nonetheless, they certainly haven't stepped up. If others have faltered, you haven't seen any others sort of step up in their absence. And I think there's still huge issues for them in that front line, United. No matter what happens today, no matter what happens, you know, that is something I think they've got to address in the summer, because they're not going to get by another season relying on Anthony. Because players like Anthony, he's not going to get you 10, 15 goals. Mm. No, absolutely no chance. And I think if they were wingers at Man United, and they're playing on the wrong side, cutting in, they have to be scoring goals regularly, hitting the back of the net. You know, if they're cutting in, putting it in the top corner, or you saw Elliot today cutting sort of half, knowing the goalkeeper might think he's going to left foot bend it to the far corner, then he reversed it at the near. Mm. You know, that is the quality that we just haven't seen it from the likes of him.
Martial's an interesting one now, though, because his time is now, really. Like, this is it for him. He's been kind of gifted an opportunity because of how poor principally Rashford has been. Like, I was listening to Nathan's commentary at Goodison, where he's like, he has been a disgrace in the first half, but then he scored.
Yeah.
And in fairness, they beat Everton, which now looks an outstanding result. And, like, Martial does have the talent, certainly to get, like, 15 goals in a season if he gets a run of games, but he has to accept it. He has to, like, take this chance, because...
He's 28 now.
Yeah, you'd imagine, like, I don't know, is he going to get another chance? Like, you'd wonder how much Ten Hag actually trusts him, but he's kind of been thrown in by default. And I do wonder, like, today is kind of a big day for him as well. They're 1-0 down. He's going to get chances, and you wonder, will he accept the mantle and go on a bit of a run here? Because it might be last chance saloon for him.
Yeah, you'd imagine so. Certainly Ten Hag. Like, there was a clip from, was it the Galatasaray game, where, like, himself and Martial are just not in the same wavelength. Mm. Could have been the Newcastle game, but just shouting and gesturing at each other, and clearly some disagreements there. Like, the Jadon Sancho thing, like, I was just reading during the week the quotes from Eric Ten Hag on Jadon Sancho, and he was asked about Sancho's future at the club, and he said, "It is about a culture, and every player has to match certain standards, and it was about that. What will happen there, he knows what he has to do if he wants to return, and it is up to him." Like, there's been reports the last day or two that he's likely to leave Old Trafford in the January transfer window. Rumours of maybe a return to Borussia Dortmund might seem like the obvious place for him to go, somewhere he obviously knows and is used to. Like,
yeah, I think as on a human level, you'd love to see Sancho go away and enjoy his football, get a smile on his face and get back into the English team and fulfil the talent that we all know he has. But it's a long way from here to there. And look, he's obviously a very talented boy. But what David is saying there about Manchester United is absolutely right. Obviously, Højlund is on the bench. I would start Højlund any game that he's over 80% fit. I think for me, he starts for Manchester United. But Højlund, one of Højlund's best attributes for me is going and attacking the ball, going and roughing up people. Big, strong, physical player. Now, he's more than that, but he has those attributes in his locker. But Manchester United play with Anthony and Garnacho. They're not wingers that want to go down the line. They want to come inside and play a little bit of football. So for me, they need to mix it up. They have to run down the line, cross a ball, then come inside. Anthony is so one-dimensional. And look, every now and then you come up against a winger, a left-footed winger, that you know what he's going to do, but you just can't stop it. Mm-hmm. Anthony's not really in that bracket. You know what he's going to do when you can't stop it, and generally he will just drift through games. And again, that's an Eric Ten Hag signing. There's a lot of Ten Hag signings that you're looking at and you're thinking, I'm not too sure. But again, you could probably say that over the last five years at Old Trafford, that a lot of the signings just haven't been up to standard.
For anyone just tuning in, 22 minutes on the clock at Old Trafford. Manchester United nil, Bournemouth 1, as we talk about them. Dominic Solanke opening the scoring for Bournemouth on 5 minutes. Bruno Fernandes with a bit of a wayward hospital pass, you could call it, towards Scott McTominay in the middle of the pitch, lost it, and then down the right hand flank in front of the Stretford end, ball crossed in, and Solanke tucks it away past Andre Onana. 1-0 for Bournemouth. The other games, by the way, 3 o'clock kickoffs, Sheffield United nil, Brentford nil. It's Brighton nil, Burnley nil after 22 minutes at the Amex. Evan Ferguson starting that game for Brighton and leads the line for them. Wolves and Nottingham Forest, there has been a goal at Molineux. Let's hear about that one now from Frank Watson.
Harry Toffolo, the unlikely scorer of the opening goal here, playing a bit further forward today for Forest, usually left back, left wing back today, arriving on the far post and meeting a Nico Williams cross from the right with a perfect header down into the ground, the ball bouncing up into the Wolves net. Craig Dawson desperately trying to keep it out, unable to do so. First real goalmouth action of the entire game. Forest have made seven changes. They look to be fairly defensive minded, but they've taken the lead and they're going to now defend it for all they're worth, I'm sure. It's Wolves 0, Forest 1.
Might as well preempt Brighton not winning, because at 41 years of age, I finally got invited into a last man standing competition.
You're not 40, Johnny.
41. Yeah. And reluctantly accepted anyway. Looked at, like, can't go for Man City at Luton. So it was like Brighton at home while they're playing second from bottom. Evan Ferguson leading the line. So that'll be a nil all draw anyway.
Yeah. Well,
there we go.
Oh, my word. Oh, it's offside. Bournemouth having a good ball in the goal in front of the Stretford end yet again. And looks like they'd given had a 2-0 lead at Old Trafford, but that has been disallowed for offside. Let's just double check that. Usually there's the VAR checks, but if it's obvious, we'll see now. It was Solanke, was it, who had gone?
Yeah, they're both
So no danger of that one being given in the end. Linesman was fairly quick to put the flag up. On that note, someone said, Mick and Cork has texted into 53106, and keep your texts coming in. Lads, there was nothing more predictable than United winning during the week, we're not expected to, and then getting turned over today.
Chelsea weren't great either, you know. They look like a team that doesn't have a great deal of confidence. It was a really good game, but it's funny, just chatting to some of my mates afterwards, including a Chelsea fan, and he's just like, these are two teams that won't be in the top four. And maybe you're kind of, but I did think their spur was very good, Man United. Like, I thought from the position they were in, top four at best probably for the season. Yeah. But in fairness, like, this is like, make the text are in, this is a big game. They kind of have to win this. After, like, you can't beat Chelsea then not turn up at home to Bournemouth.
And Mick and Cork did add on the text line, also United legend David Beckham in the studio with you today with the Peaky Blinders cap.
There we go. Yeah. Jojo, our producer in chief, said it suited me, so I went with that today.
Yeah, for the radio listeners, Johnny Ward has landed in with the Peaky Blinders cap. Like, I feel underdressed, I have to say now.
Yeah,
a little bit underdressed. I should have worn the Peaky Blinders cap.
Well, it's
when I look at David Beckham, doesn't jump to my head.
Ten Hag actually. Ten Hag is wearing.
Ten Hag, but
surely we've better things to talk about.
Yeah, move on is what you're saying. Move on quick.
Liverpool. Let's talk about Liverpool. We're 25 minutes in and we haven't mentioned Liverpool.
The pearl of the fans listening. So Crystal Palace 1, Liverpool 2, full time score in the early kickoff. Mateta with a penalty on 57 minutes to give Palace the lead in that one. And Mo Salah on 76 minutes equalised, and then Harvey Elliott with a winner in the 91st minute. There was 10 minutes of out of time at the end of that game at Sellers Park, and 10 man Palace, it has to be said as well. Jordan Ayew picking up a second yellow card in that game with 15 minutes left.
David Conley's got to be the best start, so he said at start season Liverpool 100% contenders. I have to say I didn't really see it, but the last two games they didn't play well today. For at least 70-80 minutes they didn't play well. Again, they made changes in midfield. Gravenberch, who I really like, was taken off, but Elliott came on. Obviously he got the goal, and you kind of felt once he equalised they were going to score. But David, I think you're right, and the thing as well is, like, they're just using their squad so well. Like, Nunes didn't have a particularly good game today. Salah was relatively quiet. They still won.
Yeah, I mean, thanks for bringing it up. I can dine out on the back of that. I don't think it would take a rocket scientist to see that they were going to go close this year, to be honest. But I mean, a word on the goal, right? The first goal from Salah. Which no one really talks about is the pass from Curtis Jones. A little 3-yard pass from Curtis was so cute and clever. It reminded me of Isak scored a goal for Newcastle against Chelsea, right? And everyone rushed out to close down the 17-year-old Lewis Miley on the edge of the box. And 99 times out of 100, most players would smash this at goal, and he played a beautiful little pass into Isak, who was in space in the box in a simple side-foot finish. And that's the difference. Like, Curtis Jones, I mean, I saw him live at Brentford. I mean, I think he's a terrific player, Curtis Jones. The awareness just to lay it off to Mo Salah. Bit of luck with the deflection. Obviously, it helped to have a man extra. But, I love that, because it just showed you that, you know, in the pressure situations in and around the box where you need real calmness and composure and to, like, select the right decision. You know, Curtis could have shot there. He could have taken it down onto his left. Awareness, Mo was right beside him. I thought that was brilliant. And then the goal from Harvey Elliott was class, a little drop of the shoulder to lose Mateta. And yeah, they got the win, and the bench certainly helped them. So, and it's a tiring week for a lot of these teams. They're playing European football. I mean, they're on the grind, make no mistake, no matter what anyone says. You know, when they're operating at this level, they are earning every penny, let me tell you.
Mm. And the funny thing about that game earlier, like, Crystal Palace did nearly everything perfectly, didn't they? Like it was seamless match.
11v11, it's 11v11. They didn't really look like scoring Liverpool. Yeah. No, there was with the 10 minutes, there ended up being a long way to go. But I thought Palace were very, very good. First half, Liverpool had barely, like, they'd barely one or two chances. Mm. And Palace, when they took the lead, actually, I thought they deserved it. They had a goal disallowed in the first half, hit the post, sending off, change everything. But Liverpool are grinding out results. And at this stage of the season, that's really, really encouraging, because that's two games where they haven't played well and they've won.
Well, that's title winning signed, isn't it, Keith? Like, if you're winning games like Sheffield United during the week, like Palace today, that's what you need to do.
Yeah, look, Arsenal have done it as well against Brentford a couple of weeks ago in the last minute when Kai Havertz got the winner. And every now and then there's going to be a little 15-minute spell towards the end of games when things are going a little bit static. It's not really working, but you have to just dig in and get the win. And look, Liverpool, there's a slice of luck because the Jordan Ayew sending off. If that doesn't happen, maybe they don't get turned over, Crystal Palace. But Liverpool still had to go and take full advantage of it. And I do really like the squad. I think Endo is getting better the more he's playing in the Premier League. He's starting to get better and better, but that man Mohamed Salah, you just keep giving him the ball. If you're in that Liverpool midfield, it's the easiest thing in the world. You just give the ball to Diaz and Salah, let them go and win you the game. It's like, I do think a lot of my Liverpool mates last night were telling me that they'll finish ahead of Arsenal, so
right.
I'm not too sure about that. I think Arsenal are maybe just a little bit better of a squad, but it wouldn't be surprising whatsoever. I think Liverpool have a bit of class and you have that bit of character as well, that they can win games of football when they're not particularly at their best.
The worry I'd have is their midfield and McAllister, who hasn't been as good as maybe people expected he would. I think it's the role that he's playing and just trying to fit into the team, but that injury he got during the week, that forces Gravenberg to come in, who wasn't great today. So I think that's in really good games. I do wonder, are Liverpool kind of quite up to it? But at the moment, the way Man City are playing, God, they're massive contenders. And like, if they go into the new year top or second, you're like, they're going to really kick on the second half of the season. But the McAllister thing will be a bit of a worry.
Yeah, we've got a text in here, the 53106, something worth mentioning as well. Has anyone on the off-the-ball team mentioned young 18-year-old Mark O'Mahony from Cork on the bench again for Brighton? He only joined them in January. Great lad too, says Fiona in Cork. We did mention him a few weeks ago when he was on the bench before. But yeah, young lad from Carrigaline in County Cork. Played for Cork City in the League of Ireland, and then joins Brighton on a 3-year contract back in January from Cork City. Reported fee of an initial £50,000 as well. The fact that he's getting, named in matchday squads at 18 for Brighton is some sign.
There's some club as well, Keith, aren't they? Like, the way Tony Bloom runs the whole thing, like, and for Irish players, it nearly seems to be the go-to now, like, if you want to develop.
Yeah, I think any underage player would be thinking, if they get the chance to go into the Brighton setup with De Zerbi, he's widely regarded as one of the best tacticians in and around Europe. So, yeah, and he has that nurturing nature. You can see the way he is with Evan Ferguson. Doesn't just throw him in and play him every single game. Cherry picks when he will and won't play him because of his age. And I think, yeah, there's a lot of young Irish players there, but, we don't want to get too excited about it. It's brilliant for him to be on the bench. Great experience, but thank God there's not an international window now till next year, because people are saying, put him in, put him on the bench. There's our problem solved. We can do it now. Let's go back to this sexy way of football. But
yeah, you depressed the hell out of me the last time we're on. I just can't do it anymore.
Don't get carried away.
If Keith Tracy is saying we can't do it, it's not good, because he was actually a baller, anyway.
But he's a young striker, Mark O'Mahony, and we love to get excited about young strikers at Brighton.
18, that's like, whatever about, like, 18 years of age on the bench in the Premier League is bonkers. Like, there are hardly any Irish players in the Premier League full stop now, and to be on the bench at 18 for a very good team, incredible achievement, young man.
Squad number 55 is Mark O'Mahony for Brighton, so keep an eye out for him. Hopefully he gets off the bench. Lovely to see him get an appearance. Lads, we're going to take a very short ad break, so the latest scores across the Premier League this afternoon. We're watching Manchester United 0 Bournemouth 1.
In fairness to Anthony, I think he's fouled there. Like, he kind of goes, tries to go two players. He's had an infuriating game so far, but he's gesturing to the referee, giving it the old kind of
the usual,
you know, yeah. And he's not a happy chappy.
No, not happy. 32 minutes on the clock at Old Trafford. Manchester United 0, Bournemouth 1. Dominic Solanke on 5 minutes, giving Bournemouth the lead in that game. Wolves 0, Nottingham Forest 1 at Molineux. Toffolo on 14 minutes. I mean, Steve Cooper needs a result after their 5-0 tonking during the week, where they apologised in front of the travelling away fans for that one. In fact, Wolves, as I say, have just equalised. Wolves 1, Nottingham Forest 1. I'll get the score for you for Wolves in just a few minutes. Sheffield United 0, Brentford 0 is the latest score at Bramall Lane, and Evan Ferguson leading the line, as we said. Brighton 0, Burnley 0, Crystal Palace 1, Liverpool 2 in the early game. In the Championship, two full-time scores, Blackburn Rovers, Keith's old club, 2-0. They were on the wrong end of that game against Leeds United at Ewood Park this afternoon. Daniel James and Crescencio Somerville, a goal in each half for Leeds. Blackburn 0, Leeds 2, the full-time score. That leaves Leeds now in third in the table. Leicester City on the top on 49 points. You've Ipswich Town in 46, and then it's Leeds in third on 41 points. Blackburn down in 12th on 28 points. Sunderland 2, West Brom 1 is a full-time score from earlier on as well. Ballard and Alex Neil with the goals for Sunderland. That leaves Sunderland 7th on the table. West Brom remain in 5th. The latest scores across the Championship as well. Cardiff City 0, Millwall 0. Huddersfield Town 1, Bristol City 0. It's Leicester City 1, Plymouth Argyle 0. Middlesbrough 0, Ipswich Town 0. Norwich and Preston North End are also scoreless, as are QPR and Hull City. Rotherham 0, Swansea City 0. It's Stoke City 0, Sheffield Wednesday 0. And no goals either at Vicarage Road. Watford 0, Southampton 0. We'll be back on Off the Ball Football Saturday in just a few minutes. Keith Tracy, David Connolly and Johnny Ward with us. Stay with us. Peaky Blinders theme tune in honour of
last one of the actors during the week, actually. The poet whose name escapes me, but yeah,
Johnny has the Peaky Blinders hat on, just in case people are confused as to why we're playing that music there.
Bit of Tom Shelby coming involved. Yeah. Are you a fan?
I loved it. Yeah. I haven't finished it now, but I enjoyed what I've watched.
Yeah,
proper job.
All right.
He gets the bloody accent and all
that. That's good, yeah.
It's just one word, though, in fairness.
You've a good sideline in impressions, Shane. You've many talents. Yeah.
Did you ever pick up the accents, Keith, when you were playing for... You had to be there long enough, I suppose, to start
talking. I don't think you would have, would you?
No, I was probably the opposite, that I tried to keep the accent everywhere I went. I was the total opposite. And everywhere I went, they were like, they couldn't understand me, but I enjoyed it, so I just done my own thing. Yeah, I didn't... I would always... sort of gravitate towards the Scottish and the Welsh lads or the foreign boys. So I didn't expectly, you know, pick up too many English accents. But me daughters did. Me daughters come over. They were only over for the last 6 months of my career, and they both come back to Dublin with two English accents.
It's brilliant. You see, I remember that, was it Stefan Bajcetic, the Liverpool player, had a bit of a rumble of a Scouse accent in one of the interviews last year. Like, you can pick these things up. I had a mate who went to college in Galway. Oh, as Bournemouth hit the post and nearly double their advantage, Solanke again, I think it was. Onana was beaten all ends up on 40 minutes at Old Trafford. Man United 0, Bournemouth 1. And really, really close. Again, playing out from the back.
They've been so poor, to be fair. Like, they've, in fairness, they're actually lucky not to be further behind and have created next to nothing.
That was close.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how they rally in the second half. It's been really poor from United.
Yeah, no, I was saying there, the mate who went to college in Galway, and after about 2 months, like, a strong Monaghan accent, came back from college in Galway after 2 months and was... start talking with this Galway accent.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with the Galway accent.
No, nothing wrong with my dad's a Galway. Half my family are Galway. Yeah. But he came back, he came into the pub, and the lads were just like, no, would you stop? Like,
You're
not coming into this pub in Monaghan talking like that.
I remember, like, people coming up to college from...
You're there a wet week.
Well, people coming... I remember being in college in DCU, people from the arsehole of the Midlands, 2 months in on about the roundabout. I was like, you're from... I can't name the place, but it was the Midlands. The roundabout. It's like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
23 years here, son, and haven't lost my accent.
That's good, though.
And neither of you, to be fair.
In fairness, yeah, you have to hold on to it. Brighton 0, Burnley 0 on 40 minutes. United 0, Bournemouth 1 is the latest score. Sheffield United 0, Brentford 0, and Wolves 1, Nottingham Forest 1. Aston Villa, Arsenal coming up at 5:30. And the early kickoff, of course, Crystal Palace 1, Liverpool 2 in the at Selhurst Park. Salah and Elliott with the goals for Liverpool in that one. David, you might have seen Jurgen Klopp.
Speaks of a fellow who never lost his accent.
Yeah, well, there you go. It's good to hear. But the tetchiness of Jurgen Klopp, David, is something I think we've spoken about on the show before, but I don't know if you've heard this interview he did with Amazon after the match during the week, where, I mean, he was a bit of a joke from the interviewer asked, saying, your favourite kickoff time, the early kickoff against Palace coming up this weekend. And Jurgen Klopp did not like it whatsoever. I mean, he is a man who just wears his heart in his sleeve, doesn't
he?
What did you make of it, David?
I guess... I mean, I think the last time I was on this, I had a bit of a row because we're talking about Ireland and the players and you know, people having a go at them, maybe not delivering and this, that, and the other. I mean, I can understand, like, so the presenters, right? They're trying to make a lighthearted, you know, and like from Jürgen's point of view, and look, I'm a huge fan of Jürgen Klopp, but I also know lots of people that hate playing against him, and their bench is a nightmare, and they are the most aggressive bench. Like, he's probably one of the most aggressive coaches on the sideline. He's a huge competitor, right? But sometimes the questioning, just because, say, the presenter are trying to, you know, every presenter or pundit has to smile at the telly or whatever, Jürgen Klopp doesn't have to come on there and smile and pacify whoever, BT or wherever, it's Sky. You know, he's there to do a job for Liverpool. And to be honest, I don't mind him that he was a bit sensitive, maybe. He's probably at the game coming up, the injuries that he suffered, and thinking, you know, geez, you know, he would probably be 1,000 other places rather than doing that interview. So, I mean, sometimes I can understand what people are saying, like, you know, the managers have got to be, you know, appear nice to everyone and put a smile on the face. But ultimately, like, all he's thinking about is, how am I going to win the game against Palace at the weekend with another half 12 kickoff? And he probably wasn't in the mood for, you know, the sort of the friendly banter that seems to be coming into sort of soccer sort of broadcasts, which I'm absolutely fine with. So I've got no problem with that. I think I thought it was fine. It's a bit spiky, but I don't mind that.
The other thing which David is kind of alluding to there, like Jürgen Klopp might be asked or might have to give his opinion on 500 to 1,000 matters in any given week.
Yeah.
And if you isolate one incident where he's just like, I hear, like, I'm not having this at the moment, like, you can, anyone can look bad, I guess.
Yeah, in fairness.
Yeah, can you imagine the amount of now questions they have to field in a week, you know, at a press conference or whatever it may be. I mean, like, it would just, no doubt we drain you down. I know it's part of the job, but I'm with Jürgen on this. So I think, you know, for the presenters and all that, they can have a high five and a laugh and a joke, and ultimately they're not going to, it's not going to cost them their job or whatever. You know, they'll go to the next game, critique the next team, critique the next players, and do the next radio show. But for Klopp and that, you know, they got important stuff on the line, right? I mean, so sometimes you're not in the mood, and I think it's up to the interviewer as well, to be honest, to read the room and know, like, whether that is appropriate at that time.
Yeah.
Not just to go off their script of, like, I tell you what, I might crack a little funny joke here about another half to a kick of knowing that maybe Jürgen's not quite in the mood because maybe they were seeing how he come over. I think that's in the skill of the interviewer as well, I think. So
yeah, maybe you get off on the wrong foot and with the Klopp, line of questions.
Klopp should have given him a funny how kind of type response, you know, just then wound him up for 2 minutes, you know.
Yeah, but look, I get the whole thing of, you know, Klopp, you know, not having to go and smile. That's absolutely fine. But you just need to be careful because those little narratives when the media starts spinning, you know, you don't like the early kickoff, oh, you're up against it again. All of a sudden you're thinking, if Klopp reacts like that, if you're a player and you watch that interview, you're thinking, maybe there is something behind this. Maybe we don't like the early kickoffs. And then you go 1-0 down to Crystal Palace, and rather than digging in, you're starting to think, yeah, the manager knows we don't like these. And
Psychological thing.
It can just creep in, but look, that clearly hasn't happened because Liverpool have won 2-1, so everything's rosy in the garden. But I always think of Sean Dyche in these situations, and he just, if any sort of little excuse starts to creep in from the media, or they try and manipulate the situation and say, you must be tired, he would always go the other way and say, well, I'm not having that. It's not an excuse, Wayne. We aren't tired. We're going again. We're professional footballers. This is what we're built for. And Klopp's answer just left that little bit of, you know, maybe we are tired.
It kind of leads into the stuff for during the week, Pep Guardiola versus Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher. So people hadn't seen this as well. Carragher, Neville and Michael Richards accused Pep Guardiola's side of a bit of complacency after all these recent draws. And Guardiola name-checked them in response to the press conference during the week. And he said he knows how difficult it is. Otherwise, Gary Neville would have won 4 consecutive Premier Leagues in the best period of Manchester United, but didn't do it, you know. Jamie Carragher didn't win 1. Michael Richards didn't win 4 Premier Leagues in a row. Never, ever. It's never happened. There's more chance of it not happening than happening.
Yeah, although Guardiola didn't, I'm not sure if we were in the same press conference or not, but basically said, like, our players have been behaving like the cat that caught the cream, basically. I'm paraphrasing now for a long time. They kind of need a bit of a complacency check themselves. But, like, Guardiola and Klopp share a trait in common. Like, they can't really take kind of criticism at all well, particularly Guardiola. It's probably part of his greatness, but, I mean, call him up on Manchester City's fair play issues and all of that and see how he responds.
Yeah. He'd get a bit tetchy himself, certainly when that has been brought up. But that's the thing as well, Keith, isn't it? The complacency with Man, like, I don't know if it is complacency, that the Man City problem, and the fact that they're not maybe as firing on all cylinders as they have been recently. But when you've won the treble, I can imagine it's hard to get yourself motivated for more, or
yeah,
is it?
To go, well, look, I've obviously never won a treble, but I've accomplished things within my football career that I thought, okay, I've reached the peak of the mountain now. The Manchester City boys obviously failed that, but I think there's a little bit of wishful thinking here from the rest of the league. I know City haven't been at their brilliant best, but City are notoriously slow starters. I think when we turned around the bend that January, you know, that's when the chips will be down. That's when City need to start putting in performances. But for me, like, you look at the last five results, three draws, a win and a loss. The three draws were against Spurs. Very, very unlucky not to win that game. I know Spurs were good in it, but the last minute, as Grealish is running through, could have easily won the game. Probably could have won it with the amount of chances they had within the game. They come back to beat Leipzig when in the Champions League from 2-0 down. They draw with Liverpool, draw with Chelsea, and then go and lose to a very, very good Villa team. So, you know, I wouldn't be pressing the panic button just yet. As an Arsenal fan, I'm very, very hopeful that, you know, they've reached the peak and maybe they think there's not a lot more we can do, but Look, Haaland scored 14 goals already this season, and people are trying to tell me that, you know, maybe he's not quite firing on all cylinders. Alvarez has 4 goals, 4 assists. Doku has 5 assists. Grealish, Foden has 4 goals. There's goals all over that team. And look at the next 4 Premier League fixtures for Manchester City is Luton, Palace, Everton and Sheffield United.
Yeah.
So you would expect on paper them to go and win them. So they've had a very tough run of fixtures. They haven't come up smelling the roses as we expect with them, but they're notoriously slow starters, and I think Arsenal, Liverpool, whoever it is, need a buffer going into January from Manchester City, because they will just start eating up the ground.
100%. He's never gone 5 games without a win in his career, Guardiola. Right. So tomorrow, that's on the line. It's quite interesting.
Yeah, that's going to be an added element to that game tomorrow afternoon. City, of course, travelling to Luton Town. The other games tomorrow, Fulham, West Ham at 2, Everton, Chelsea also at 2, and then we'll have live exclusive commentary and off the ball of Tottenham Hotspur and Newcastle United. That's at 4:30, Vinnie Perth alongside Stephen Doyle for that one. There's been a couple of goals in the Premier League as well. Sheffield United 1, Brentford 0 late on in the first half stoppage time in that one. McAtee in the first minute of added time at the end of the first half, giving Sheffield United the lead. And Johnny, half time of the Amex, Brighton 0 Burnley 1. You were right with your last man standing might be in a bit of bother.
The last man standing, turn off the lights. Yeah, so we needed a big one for Evan Ferguson in the second half. Also.
Yeah, and of course Darragh O'Shea starting at centre half in that game for Burnley. I'd like to see that one. Would Darragh O'Shea be a man to marshal Evan Ferguson, I wonder? Like,
might well be, yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting one to see that your international teammate coming up against you. Darragh O'Shea has a yellow card in that first half in that game. Odegaard with the goal, by the way, for Burnley on 45 minutes. It has gone half-time at the Amex. Brighton 0, Burnley 1.
This game here, just in Old Trafford, like Man United, the only thing they can be happy is they're not further behind. And Bournemouth, but for a pass here or there, hitting the post, they've been so, so poor. Ten Hag just gone off now, half-time. I'm intrigued to see the response here. It's going to be an interesting second half.
Yeah, big time. As Johnny says, gone half-time at Old Trafford. Manchester United 0. Bournemouth 1, possibly could have been more. United didn't create many clear-cut chances, but Dominic Solanke's 5th minute goal giving the visitors the lead in that one. David, when we're talking Manchester City there, I guess that the element of their team that's missing from previous years is Kevin De Bruyne, and you'd almost forget that he's not involved, and that's clearly part of the reason possibly why they haven't been the usual Man City.
Yeah, I mean, I think as Keith said, like, they've had tough games, make no mistake. I mean, going back to the Liverpool one, which they probably should have won, right? But they didn't. But then the Tottenham one was a great game. They got done on the counter a couple of times and could have been a bit different. Aston Villa are just incredible at home. I mean, there's no doubt that performance was... If they have a better performance, then I'd like to see it, you know, in the near future from Villa. So, but they were below par there, made a mistake. So, yeah, look, it's a bit like... You're obviously going to miss a De Bruyne, or if you're a Tottenham, a Harry Kane, or a Rodri, for example, you know, but they'll come out. I think City will come out the other side. And sometimes the manager's a bit spiky because, you know, he wants maybe show a bit of fight and you know that there's obviously no easy games. I think the level has gone up with like some of the. I think Aston Villa, you know, because I worked on them in the summer in the summer series they played in America, and they were sensational, and they were doing different things, like their defensive line was a lot higher, just little bits and pieces. I think the light of Villa and some other sides have sort of really improved even after last season. So there's certainly no easy game. And when you're playing the top teams like City have, you know, they're difficult games. And look, they can still come out of it. Like you said, Luton Palace, you know, they got Everton coming up, Sheffield United. I think December seems to be fairly, I wouldn't say kind to them, but obviously a lot of winnable games.
You've mentioned his name already, Keith, but we should give a little bit of credit to Sean Dyche, because that result when it came through during the week, Everton's 3-0 win, considering they'd lost to Man United by, you know, similar scoreline not so long ago, what he's doing there is quite remarkable. Like even with the 10-point deduction, you can't see them going down.
No, I've even when the 10 points came, I thought they'll still have enough. And it's a crazy thing to say when you think of, you know, the bottom clubs within the Premier League, Sheffield United, Luton and Burnley. Everton just need to be, you know, the 17th best team in the league. But yeah, I think he's putting a real DNA into that team. I know that's another buzzword, but he's starting to put the culture is right. The defending, like it really, really means something. If they can keep Calvert-Lewin fit, Beto got a goal the other day.
Lovely team goal as well.
Exactly. Like Beto, for me, he's a little bit all over the place. He looks an absolute handful. You don't back him to score when he goes in 1v1. But I played with players like that. I played with a big boy called Jason Roberts up front at Blackburn, and he was an absolute handful. But you didn't trust him to hit the back of the net when he was through. But you weighed up the situations. You would get goals off him. You'd get in and around him because he would just create problems for people. And look, if Beto can get to between five and ten goals this season, Calvert-Lewin chip in with double figures, Decore, McNeil, I think Everton would be absolutely fine. But I think where's the glass ceiling for this? If they can get into the top half of that Premier League, I know Burnley got into the European competitions under Dyche, but that's such a huge achievement when you think of the talent that's in the top half of the Premier League. You know, it speaks for itself. Liverpool, Arsenal, Villa, City, Tottenham, United, Newcastle, to be just on the coattails of them as an Everton club when everything that's happened, the off-field issues. And you know, when Sean Dyche went into Everton, he said it's one of the biggest tasks of his career. This season obviously has been made even bigger with the 10-point deduction. And look, I think any other manager goes in there, that could have easily went south with the on-field issues.
They were rudderless, no confidence. And what does it say, look, without urinating on the grave here, what does it say about Chelsea that they thought the go-to man in trouble last season was Frank Lampard? Do you know what I mean?
Like, this is look what great I'm saying now, yeah. When I look at the Irish team and we play this style of play, when you look at Everton under Lampard, it was okay, you could watch them, it was palatable. But as soon as they lost the ball, they were absolutely wide open and teams just went right through them and bet them. And now Sean Dyche got in there, he's shored it up, he's releasing people, he is letting Dwight McNeil, he's letting Decore go and do things, but first and foremost, stop the other team from playing. Don't let them get on top, make it hard, make it difficult. And if we work harder than the opposition, probably 10 times out of 20 we'll win the game of football.
You can imagine he loves Seamus Coleman as well.
Yeah,
of course he does. Who wouldn't though? If you're a manager going into a club and Seamus is there, he's a model pro, isn't he?
We might pick up on Seamus Coleman after the ad break. It's great to see him back involved for Everton for sure after his long spell out. Halftime around the grounds of the Premier League. Manchester United 0, Bournemouth 1, Dominic Solanke on 5 minutes. It's Brighton 0, Burnley 1, Sheffield United 1, Brentford 0, Wolves 1, Nottingham Forest 1. We have Keith Tracy, Johnny Ward and David Connolly on Off The Ball Football Saturday. We'll be back after the news. You're very welcome back to Off The Ball Saturday here on Newstalk. Shane Hannah with you through until 5 o'clock this evening. We have Keith Tracy, the former Irish international, in studio with Johnny Ward as well, the broadcaster and journalist. And we have David Connolly as well, the former Irish international striker, with us on Off The Ball Football Saturday this afternoon. We'll bring you around the grounds for all the half times of the Premier League games in just a second, just to update you as well on the Investec European Champions Cup in the rugby. Halftime, Bath 8, Ulster 14. Ulster leading in that one. It's also Toulouse 31, Cardiff 7 at halftime. Full-time score, Exeter 19, Toulon 18, and of course last night Northampton 28, Glasgow Warriors 19 was full time score in Glasgow, and Connacht, I mean, on the wrong end of a trouncing in the sports ground in Galway, 41-5, Bordeaux coming out victorious in that game. We were talking Seamus Coleman there, lads, before the outbreak. I mean, unbelievable to see him back, and then you see the images of him celebrating the win with fans at the end. He just gives it everything, doesn't he?
Two former Irish defenders on Premier Sport there, break, Damien Delaney and
Kenny Cunningham, is it?
Kenny Cunningham. Yep. I was just thinking, like, these are two lads who do not suffer fools gladly. I'd like to kind of hear what they're saying about Man United, but Man United could do with the spirit of Seamus Coleman at the moment. I don't know. I felt after that injury in the Welsh game, this lad's never going to come back from that. Now, a few professional footballers did point out that the injury itself, you can get over it. But like, so much of his game was his pace, and he doesn't have the pace he had. And even you look at his performances for Ireland in a team that was struggling for the rare enough occasions he played in the last campaign for Stephen Kenny. He was still outstanding most of the time. And, you know, I saw him, I'm lucky enough to say I saw him playing League of Ireland. And I remember thinking at the time, like, for a right back, this lad, every game you watch him, he has a big role in the game. But did I think he'd have the career he'd have? And I think a lot of that is down to his attitude as well. Like,
yeah, a lot of it's down to his attitude. The very first time I set eyes on Seamus, he came into the Irish under 21s team, and I was the captain at the time, and Don Givens had a little word in my ear saying, look, Seamus is coming in, he's a bit of a shy lad, get the arm around him, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, make him feel welcome. And, you know, I was nice, I was polite with him, but it quickly became evident that Seamus was there. And although I think he was still playing for Sligo at the time, I don't think he'd made the move to Everton yet, but he didn't need my help whatsoever. He was a little bit raw, maybe his force touch wasn't great, but he just got better and better. And quickly, he wasn't one who would be jumping in with, you know, to get involved with banter, but he'd be always on the periphery. Really, really likeable boy, but just so humble and down to earth. And when I met Seamus, the first time I met Seamus in the under-21s, if I was to meet him now when he's playing for Everton, he's an absolute Irish legend, an Everton legend, but
same lad.
You wouldn't know it. You just would not know
it. Did you enjoy captaincy?
Not really. It all sort of blew up in my face in the end anyway, because Don Givens gave me the Irish under-21s captaincy, and I was actually due to play for the 21s in a friendly against Lithuania away, and the facts came in that I'd been selected. And I think it was Sam Allardyce told me that I'm going to start on the Saturday against Liverpool in Anfield. So we spoke to the Irish FA and said maybe it's not the best thing for me to be doing this, because it wasn't a fly from Manchester back to Dublin, back straight to Lithuania. It was Manchester to Dublin, Dublin to Paris, Paris to somewhere else. And then eventually we ended in Lithuania. So I basically said, look, I've been playing for Ireland since I'm 15. This is a friendly game. I don't think you really need to feel me out and see what I'm at. Plus, I'm going to be playing in the Premier League on the weekend. And to be fair, Don Givens straight away said, yeah, no problem, son. But then I found out I'm not going to captain the team anymore. And I think his words were to me, I'll let Trapattoni know what you're all about as well, was what I was told. That,
like, jeez. Does your three sides of the story, yours, mine, and the truth, but like, that's not good. Like, and I 100% defend you there. And in the sense, even if you took the captaincy off you and said, listen, we're having a rethink, but like, and he's not here to defend himself, I just think that's really, really poor. And I would have been disappointed.
Well, look, I wasn't. I always say this, you know, I can paint the picture of managers being a little bit unfair to me. I wasn't the easiest person in the world to manage. You know, at the drop of a hat, I'd have been found in a pub in between training sessions. So I was a very, very tough man to deal with. I was unique in the situations I would pop up. But yeah, to me face, Don Givens told me that, yeah, no problem, son, you don't have to travel. And then I was told that I won't be getting selected for Ireland anymore. And the captaincy had been taken off me. And about 6 months after that, I had to meet Don Givens at a service station, like in around Sheffield somewhere, and I had to apologise, and I came back into the squad for one or two games, and that blew up in my face too a couple of months after that as well. So again, I wasn't the easiest man in the world to coach and to.
But it takes a bit of a man management too, like, you know.
Yeah, it did. And look, I still think I was right. I still think the friendly in Lithuania was, you know, it wasn't a game I needed to play in. You could probably say I was being big headed. I didn't want to play in that game, but I was being told I was going to play in Anfield on the Hillsborough disaster for Blackburn in the Premier League. So although playing for Ireland, I'm a very, very, you know, proud Irish man. Every time I wore the jersey, I was delighted to. But I just thought in hindsight, with the way my career was going, with my lower back injury, it was weighing up for me. There was no need for me to play in that friendly game. And yeah, I ended up losing the captaincy. And now look, there was a couple of nights out I was caught as well. It was probably a totting up incident. There wasn't a standalone incident. So
fair enough.
Yeah.
See, in fairness to Keith, he's like, you know, I have to acknowledge a little bit of the blame as well.
Yeah, know? He's honest. But like, so you know how Jadon Sancho feels, being told you have to apologise if you're going to move forward here. So like, it takes a big man or a big woman to do that and to own up when you know you know you're not in the wrong, but the manager's asking for it, you have to apologise sometimes.
Yeah, well, look, I just bit the bullet because, like I say, I wanted to play for Ireland. I I was desperate to play for Ireland, and I was told that I would have to ring Don, I would have to apologise, I'd have to meet him at a service station and apologise to his face, and I did all the things I needed to do, and I got back into the squad, but I quickly burnt them bridges sharply enough, and Don Givens doesn't probably hold me in the best light.
How many senior caps you get?
Six.
Oh, for what manager or managers?
They were all under Trapattoni. Okay. And the last thing that Don Givens said to me, the second time we fell out, he said, I'm going to let Trapattoni know what you're all about, and you'll never kick a football for Ireland again. And about 3 months later, I got a phone call from Tardelli telling me I'd been selected for the Argentina game.
Take that, Don Givens.
But it's brilliant because, you know, that, like, in football, you can have all the talent in the world, but you do need a bit of luck. You need a manager to like. And when Don Givens is ringing Giovanni Trapattoni, telling him to stay away from me, that I'm a bit of a head case, that could have been somebody else who went, no problem, I'll take your opinion on board. But Trapattoni said, listen, it's a clear slate for everybody. And thankfully, I was playing well for Preston at the time.
I often think of like the likes of Stephen McPhail, Owen Garvin, players like that, that kind of, it was their misfortune that they were Irish, if that makes sense, because that sort of player, beautiful technical player, and maybe you could say Owen Garvin wasn't quite at the level of McPhail, but his serious ability, like, in my view. Did you feel that, like, I don't know, if you're in an Ireland setup where it was different, even a Stephen Kenny or that, could you have had more of a career, or was it down to yourself, kind of?
I understand. I'm clever enough to know that the Irish team that I was involved in, I had Damien Duff, Liam Lawrence, Hunty as well. I had an awful lot of Aidan McGeady. There was an awful lot of very, very good wingers in front of me. And look, I think Damien Duff, when I first got into the squad, had in around 90 caps, and it was sort of, it wasn't said amongst the camp, but it was sort of
unspoken,
understood that when Duffer gets to 100, he's going to call it a day. So I was taught, well, I'll do my understudy, I'll do my homework, I'll learn from Duffer, and when the time comes, I'll get myself in. So it didn't pan out that way, but I was clever enough to know that this Irish team that I'm on the fringes of is a very, very strong Irish team with some really, really good wingers. And notoriously, the Italians wouldn't chop and change, you know, quite so regularly. I was looking at the likes of Wes Houlihan that couldn't even get into the squad under Trapattoni. So, you know, when you're looking and Wes is not getting in and you're on the periphery, you probably just look around and think, well, I'm happy with my lot right now. But I should have done more. I had the ability to do more.
Were you an out-and-out winger, or were you more, could you have played like centre, one of a three, or?
No, back in the day, I was a left winger. I was all about my pace, just going past people and just making everything into a foot race, really, really simplistic. But as I got a little bit fatter and a little bit heavier, I came into the middle of the pitch. I was a defensive midfield player, then I was a left back for a while. I was a little bit of everything, but when I was fit and fired, I was a winger.
It's funny, the players of like the second generation Irish of African heritage, like, I'm pretty sure, did I see that Ogbeni is the fastest player in the Premier League, is that right?
Was it Ogbeni? Yeah.
Ogbeni, but you know what I'd want to know? Did he get that stat running forwards or running backwards?
Yeah.
And I'm not being tracking back. Probably like, got to track him back. So, yeah. You know, it's a brilliant, brilliant stat, but, you know,
you'd be likely to be going faster tracking back.
Well, Fessio Baselli was hauled out in front of the reporters ahead of the, kind of one of the last few games anyway that Stephen Kenny had, but they were like, is it true you've clocked as the fastest player in Serie A?
And
he goes, yeah. And they go, are you the fastest player? By the way, the fastest player like in the Ireland squad. And he goes, oh yeah, yeah. So like Ogbeni is fast, but Fessio is faster.
I'm a Memedele fancy himself against Mbappe. Back in,
he's quick
Dublin
as well.
He was sort of saying, oh no, well, I fancy myself against him. He's thinking, my God.
it's actually good. Who's the quickest footballer you've ever seen? Like the most pace on a football pitch?
The first one that jumps into my head, because like I said, I was a winger and generally I just had to get into foot races with people and I was able to run past them, but Kyle Walker was the one. He would get himself into bad defensive positions. You could get the ball past him, but you take that big touch and think, right, I'll run away, and he'd just be right back at your heels. He was the only one that you could skin, but he just would not go away.
David Connolly, who was the fastest player? Because I presume as a striker, that's the last thing you want to see is a centre half coming up against you who has pace.
In terms of for Ireland, the quickest, I reckon, I mean, Richard Dunn was, despite his size, I mean,
deceivingly quick. Yeah,
really, Dunn was like a train, wasn't he?
He was rapid, Richard. I mean, he was so, so quick. It was so difficult to get a bearing in. And also, Stevie Carr.
Yeah.
Carr was absolutely lightning. Gary Kelly wasn't far behind him, but I'd say probably those three were certainly with the Irish lads would be three of the quickest. And Dunny, for his size, was, geez, he was incredible. Yeah, had the lot, had the pace and everything else, you know, despite his size. So, yeah, Danny's probably one of the quickest, I think, yeah.
Who would be you, Shanice? Who was the quickest you've seen?
The fastest player I've seen. Geez, you don't know, you see some, like, you see, that's the thing. It's always a winger, isn't it? We're always immediately thinking of wingers, but I wouldn't have thought in David's line of thinking there where you have someone like Richard Dunne where it just wouldn't pop into your head at all. So now I'm second-guessing myself because immediately you start thinking of the wingers that you would have seen, like,
if you looked it up,
fastest players ever in the Premier League, there's obvious names that'll come up, but like...
If you think back at Croatia-France, the final of, I don't know how many years you're talking about, 5-6 years ago now.
Yeah.
It's one of my favourite bits of skill I've ever seen in a football pitch. Pogba was at his absolute pomp. What was it, 3-0 in the end? But Pogba, so Pogba got the ball sort of on the half turn, and it was an outside of the foot pass if he was going to make it at all. Mm. And he played it for Mbappe. I honestly say Mbappe was about, like, he had to make about 8 yards on the fullback. And he made it in an absolute canter. And Pogba had, like, he'd about a tenth of a second in his head to decide, is this ball on? And the only reason you'd even half contemplate it was because it was Kylian Mbappe. And I've never seen speed like that. Like, it was just... Mm. And he made it with such ridiculous ease. You can imagine the crow at fullback was probably like, he must have had a look around like, I've yards on this lad. Now, the weight of the ball, it was as good a pass you'll ever see.
Yeah.
If you can find it, like, you know what I'm talking about. But, like, I'd have to say Mbappe.
The top 10 fastest Premier League in terms of the kilometres per hour reached. So here's the top 10. You have Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, 36.43 kilometres per hour, 10th. Adama Traore came in with the 9th fastest time. Darwin Nunez at 8. I'll come back to number 7.
Nunez?
Wow. Yeah, mad. I'll come back to number 7 in a second. Anthony Gordon, number 6. Mikhailo Mudryk, 36.63 kilometres per hour at 5. Traore again at number 4 has the 4th fastest speed. Mo Salah at number 3. Aubameyang again has the number 2 fastest speed. Number 1, 36.72 kilometres per hour clocked. Antonio Rudiger.
Wow.
Rudiger.
Which I did not expect. Holds the record for the fastest Premier League player after stopping a Brighton and Hove Albion attack on December 12th, 2021 with a sprint of 36.72 kilometres per hour.
Must have been as windy as it is today.
There you go. There must be, yeah, a tailwind behind him or something. Shane Long is number 7 that I skipped there. Best speed was... Go again, David.
Well, I worked on an Arsenal game, right, a few years ago, and Aubameyang, he might be quickest on the pitch. Let me tell you, he is the quickest to get in his car and get out of that stadium, right? He was in lockdown, yeah? And they were playing, whoever they were playing, right, and he was out of favour, yeah, because Mikel Arteta, you know, I think Aubameyang was renowned for being late or whatever, ill-disciplined, whatever it may be. Anyway, he was on the bench. It might have been the Newcastle. They might play Newcastle. Can't remember. But it was lockdown. So in lockdown, if you're working on the game, you could actually drive into the stadium. No fans. It was amazing. Straight in, underground car park, straight out. You had like, and then they gave you about 10 minutes to get out of the stadium. I mean, it was, you finish commentating, you're off. Well, I couldn't have been in my car any quicker after the final whistle, right? The final whistle had obviously gone on the pitch. He must have gone into the dressing room, not showered, not changed, put his clothes on. I got in my car and a gold Lamborghini pulled in front of me. And it was his, or a gold, whatever it is, flash car. It was his car and he was in front of me. So he's quick on the pitch, but he's pretty quick off it as well.
The weird thing is he hasn't stopped telling that story about meeting David Connolly that day as well since, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, and also I guess that, I mean, we might get onto Arsenal when they're on fast players, but that comes back to a bit about our, how Arteta is doing things there. But, you know, discipline and all this sort of stuff. But basically, you know, I know people at Arsenal, they've told me, yeah, he just suffers nothing. And, and you know, it's interesting, like, because he played under Arsene Wenger, right? Just going off topic here, but he played under Arsene Wenger. Now, at Southampton, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain made his debut when I was at Southampton. He went to Arsenal, right? He came back into Southampton for lunch a few times, and he would say to the lads, Jesus, like, you know, the lads come out 10:40, we're meant to start at 10:30, and Wenger says nothing. You know, Van Persie could come out, nothing said. Wenger just wanted a happy camp, relaxed environment, whatever. Now, Arteta's playing under him. He's now the number one. And I've heard he sends lads in the early days, like he would send them home if they had the wrong tie on going to a match day squad. Whether that's true or not, I don't exactly know. The point being, although he worked under someone who was pretty relaxed and wanted that, he's gone hard line discipline to you know, form this team a bit like some other managers, you know, have had to, like Erik ten Hag maybe. So it was just interesting because he had to be hard line with Aubameyang, and obviously, you know, that didn't go very well because he couldn't wait to get out there. But it worked in the end, right? And maybe, you know, maybe he's got the squad that he wants. Maybe Ten Hag with Sancho wants the squad that he wants. And to do that, maybe, you know, you've got to have a bit of, yeah, you got to make some tough decisions and be disciplined, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. Let me just update people on the scores around the Premier League. Approaching an hour gone, 59 minutes on the clock at Old Trafford. Manchester United nailed Bournemouth 1. Anthony Martial a couple of minutes ago coming off the pitch. Rasmus Højlund is on for United. The first change they have made. Yes, it is the first change. Philip Billing came on there now as well for Bournemouth in place of Antoine Semenyo. So that was the first change for United. United nailed Bournemouth 1, the latest score. Brighton nailed Burnley 1 on 62 minutes. Odegaard with the only goal of the game just before half-time for Burnley in that one. And Evan Ferguson led the line for Brighton and is still on the pitch for them. They have made four substitutions. Matoma, Gilmore, Hinchelwood and Igor all coming off the bench for Brighton, but Evan Ferguson so far has remained on the pitch for them. It's Sheffield United 1, Brentford 0 with an hour gone. McAtee with the only goal of the game for Sheffield United in first half stoppage time. And Wolves 1, Nottingham Forest 1 as a latest score. Matheus Cunha equalising for Wolves after Toffolo had given Forest the lead after 14 minutes. And the half past five game, Aston Villa against Arsenal, huge game at Villa Park coming up. We'll get the team news from that one probably in around 10 minutes or so. But Keith, you mentioned Arsenal, your club. It's such a huge game, and Unai Emery coming up against his former club just adds a little bit of spice to this one, but not an easy place to go, Villa Park.
No, not an easy place to go at all. Obviously, just having a really good game against Manchester City as well. And look, I'm very, very fearful of Aston Villa at the minute. They, under Unai Emery, look at the tactically very, very good, brought a lot of good players into the squad. Pau Torres for me is a standout centre-half, really, really good centre-half. Moussa Diaby, really good attacking player, really, really quick on the counter-attack. But defensively, I love the setup. Just drop into a 4-4-2, two banks of four, Ollie Watkins, Diaby on the periphery. As soon as we win it, Douglas Luiz go and link up, and they've players, they've danger from all over the pitch. And when you look at Aston Villa, you know, you can say there's so much talent in the building, but the likes of John McGinn, somebody who's an absolute superstar for Scotland, brilliant, brilliant Premier League player, but possibly a little bit underrated and still feels like he has something to prove. And look, not for me, I think he's absolutely fabulous, big fan of his, but when you've a pro in the building like that who goes about his business, just does it day after day, there's the standard Scotland Aston Villa driving them forward. I think the younger lads look at that, even the older pros, there won't be a lot of lads older than him within there, but the ones who are thinking, right, he's setting the bar and that's what we need to get to. So, yeah, look, I'm delighted because I thought Unai Emery did a decent job at Arsenal, not the best Arsenal squad in the world, but I thought he was okay, he had us competing, he had us playing a decent style of football and probably did as well as he could have done with that Arsenal team. So I'm delighted that he's gone away and come back and doing really, really well. And I wouldn't put it past Aston Villa to finish in the top six and pick up a European trophy along the way.
So on that, right, like you wouldn't be surprised if they got top six. Say they win tonight, right, this evening. They go to 35 points. That's only a point behind Arsenal and 2 points behind Liverpool. Like, is it fanciful to say that they would get anything more than a top four finish, say? Like, we're not saying here that if they, you know, say they win tonight and get a 2-0 win and all of a sudden people are thinking, right, they've beaten Man City and Arsenal in 1 week. They can't be title contenders, can they? This isn't a Leicester City type year.
No, I don't think so. But then again, if you'd have asked me that halfway through Leicester season when they won the Premier League, I'd have said I don't fancy them. But I just think things will come and go undone. I think there's one or two players that are just invaluable to that team. I think if you take Ollie Watkins out for a month, 2 months, I think maybe they go a little bit more blunt. I think another one that's really, really imperative for Aston Villa moving forward is Matty Cash going from right back. I think if you take him out, look, there's some very good right backs at the club, but if you take him out, you just come down a couple of levels and that threat you have down the right wing is not quite as prominent. So I wouldn't be surprised if Aston Villa keep their starting 11 fit, healthy and with the, you know, running like they have done, but Can they compete in Europe and the Premier League? I don't think so. And I think if they're fourth, fifth coming into the business end of the European stuff, I think Unai Emery will, you know, put all his eggs into the European basket and think, right, let's go and win this trophy. And yeah, that's why I'm saying top six. But I wouldn't say it's fantastical now for Villa to get top four. Definitely able to, but I think they need one or two to slip up and have a poor ending to the seasons.
We haven't talked about Man United for 10 seconds. But just the 17 minutes, I'm watching it here, created next to nothing. There's just a moment there that now it kind of summed up Bruno Fernandes to an extent where he claimed he asked the referee for basically a high foot. Now, the Bournemouth player's foot was basically like, it was at 90 degrees off the ground. It was not high basically at all. And instead of like chasing down the ball, he starts gesturing at the referee looking for a free. And it's like, if that's my leader and I'm in a Man United team that's really struggling today.
You're told on Sunday league to play to the whistle.
First of all, it wasn't a foul. Yeah. And second of all, you're 1-0 down here. Get the ball back. Stop gesturing at the referee. So he's basically delaying the effort to win the ball back by kind of this stupid gesture at the referee. He's lost the ball since. They've just been really poor today. Really, really poor. And I don't know. Bournemouth for me will be growing in confidence.
But you're trying to speak to Marcus Rashford and you're saying, Marcus, we need you to run. We need you to run through brick walls. You're one of the local lads. The crowd need to see it means everything to you. And then you're looking at the captain, Bruno Fernandes, throwing his hands in the air. Portuguese international. Been there, done it. But just doesn't seem to have that bit of heart. And look, I think it's a non-negotiable in football. You have to run around and empty the tank on the football pitch every single game. If you're not prepared to do that, then you have to give somebody else a shot.
He was absolutely outstanding there and creating a really good chance. I think it was Hoyland. A quick one too from Bruno Fernandes, showing his quality, cleared away though.
This is the thing, David, isn't it, about Bruno Fernandes? He's such an enigma in that he can have these, as Keith says, these performances where he just isn't involved. He's throwing out straps, raising his hands in the air, and then all of a sudden he'll bash in a goal into the top corner from 30 yards or spray a pass over the top and get an unbelievable assist. So he's just hard to work out.
Well, it was the Fulham game away where they were really, really poor. Yeah. He gets a winner in the last minute. I do look at him at times thinking, like, what a five-a-side player this lad must be. Like, he's close control, he's short. Are you available for five-a-side? Just came into my head.
Colin Bewhig tried to get me into a five-a-side, but the text never actually came.
Right. He must have found something better in his mind. Yeah. Another Irish international or something. But David, he is hard to figure out, Bruno Fernandes, isn't he?
I mean, look at the goal against Galatasaray. I mean, geez, what a hit. Yeah, absolutely. There's not many players that are capable of that. But I mean, this would be a disastrous result. Absolutely disastrous if they don't get something out of this game at home. I mean, Genie Mac because obviously if they were able to pick up points and things would look a lot different in the table. You know, could be up into the top four. So. If they do lose at home to Bournemouth, goodness me.
Watch him here now, sorry. So he gets a slight connection to the head and goes down flailing, like, in the box, like, kind of holding his head. It's like, just get on with it. Like, I mean, that's literally the enigma of Bruno Fernandes in the space of about 60 seconds there.
Sorry, go on, David.
Sorry, Keith. I think what Bruno doesn't have either side of him is older, like...
Roy Keane's leaders, yeah.
Yeah, and the elite, I think Garnacho is going to be class, and he is obviously class, right? And Anthony's a good player. He doesn't have, you know, the absolute top either side of him. And often, more often than not, he's the one ripping into them, whereas maybe he feels that there's no one either side of him that are on his level. And that's an issue, because I think when you're at a club like Man United, you need players that are... on your level, above your level.
Dallo wasn't at that level there, Dave. I mean, so Dallo's, this is outstanding play from where he thinks is a shot on here. I mean, so he goes the edge of the box, quick 1-2, got to square it.
It's a bad attempt, isn't it?
But he fires it into their side netting and then he goes and kicks the hard as if to say, oh, God, that was unlucky, wasn't it? You did it. That's your decision making. Who are you annoyed at? That's ridiculous decision making.
That's what I think Bruno's big problem is, because I think Bruno feels that a lot. He's often looks like the moaning type, but he's obviously got top quality, don't get me wrong. But I think those around him, I think he just needs in his better quality so that they can be having a go at him, not the other way around, for him to race. You know, that's the issue.
The thing for Bruno Fernandes, for me, he has the hard side of the game. He's a very, very talented boy, can win a game of football with his talent, but if he just runs around a bit more, he'll get all these haters off his back. So
talent's not enough, as they say.
Talent's not enough, and you need to run around. And I remember, again, to go back to Sean Dyche, I was watching Getafe play against Barcelona years and years ago, and I just happened to be sitting next to Sean Dyche, and every time Messi was in the vicinity of the ball, he was not interested in it, but Dyche was quick to tell me.
Oh, my word, it's disaster for Manchester United. Dominic Solanke, again.
Subject to VAR, but I think he's on.
Against the run of play, you could possibly say 68 minutes in the clock. He goes over and punches the corner flag in the corner in front of those Bournemouth travelling away fans. Manchester United 0, Bournemouth 2. Onana flailed that a little bit. I don't know if he could have done better.
It was a close-in header. I think it's picking up a player who's coming into the box, and Man United just out of transition just weren't, Harry Maguire looking quite forlorn, just weren't good here. They did not defend this at all well, and it kind of was coming, to be honest.
Yeah, the rain teeming down at Old Trafford as well, and probably sums up how Manchester United fans listening into the show right now feel. Again, it was a ball from, was that Luke Shaw?
Luke Shaw, yeah.
Into nowhere, really, and it was a quick counter-attack. McTominay,
watch the mark in here. So you're like, Shaw was kind of
certainly onside. Yeah, Shaw gets caught
back post.
Reguilon wasn't there either. It's a lovely cross, and then Solanke heads it. Yeah, there's not much Onana can do when it's that close to him, I guess, or that close to goal.
It's a beautiful delivery. I mean, you've sort of two Bournemouth players are in contention to making this ball. It's a fantastic delivery. Shaw actually can't do much, but he did give the ball away in the first place under minimal enough pressure.
And Donny Iraola, the Bournemouth manager, absolutely delighted with that one. And a 2-0 lead for Bournemouth. But,
again, look, when you look at the first goal, Bruno Fernandes...
It wasn't Solanke, sorry, it was Phillip that scored the goal.
Yeah, but Bruno Fernandes loses the ball for the first goal, chips the ball into the middle of the pitch, and McTominay loses it. Bournemouth go and score. What he's doing with that one there, Luke Shaw, he chips it in, but you can play that ball if your left back is next to you. Reguilon is 30 yards up the pitch, and he just plays this little easy Aussie ball into Hoyland that gets cut out when all of a sudden Bournemouth go forward and score, and Reguilon can't get back, and that's where the goal comes from. He's jumping over the back of Luke Shaw. If Reguilon is there, he can filter in the line and push Philip Billing a little bit further down, but because Reguilon is up the pitch, Luke Shaw can't lose that ball. He has to make a better decision. And look, sometimes it's a tactic, sometimes it's a manager, but you know, they're just making nonsensical decisions, really, really poor decisions.
It's nearly a carbon copy of the first goal in a sense of giving the ball away from the back just like that. And United go on the attack here. Garnacho trying to take on his defender. It was Philip Billing with the goal, with the header. He only came on the pitch 10 minutes previous, came off the bench. And Marcus Tavernier with the lovely cross.
Fair City's been reduced in days, whatever. And I'm always like, how do these script writers just keep coming up with stories? And I think Ken Early has said, like, the Premier League is now, like, it's basically like a drama that's played out over the weekend. But, like, Man United, I mean, they just keep delivering. Like, they just keep delivering, even though they're not a particularly good or relevant football team in many ways. We've probably spent 50% of today talking about them, and they're 2-0 down at home to Bournemouth.
There you go, and the pressure will come on Eric Ten Hag. Like, you look at their fixtures coming up. Like, Bayern on Tuesday night in a must-win game, and they need results elsewhere to go their way to qualify for the last 16 in the Champions League. And then it's Anfield next Sunday at 4:30. I mean, it's not the fixture they'd want. And then a trip to David Moyes' West Ham on the 23rd of December as well, in an early kickoff in the Premier League on the Saturday. Listen, we'll come back to that. We'll take a short ad break, lads. Manchester United 0, Bournemouth 2 if you're just tuning in. Brighton 0, Burnley 1. It's Sheffield United 1, Brentford 0. Wolves and Nottingham Forest still locked at 1-1. Crystal Palace 1, Liverpool 2 was a result in the early game at Selhurst Park. Mo Salah and Harvey Elliott with a 91st minute winner for Liverpool in that game. And Aston Villa versus Arsenal is at 5:30 from Villa Park. We'll update you on all the Premier League action. We have David Connolly, Keith Tracy and Johnny Ward with us on Off The Ball Football Saturday. We'll be back in just a sec. You are very welcome back to Off The Ball Saturday here on Newstalk. Shane Hannah with you through until 5pm. We have Keith Tracy, we have David Connolly, and we have Johnny Ward with you on Off The Ball Football Saturday this afternoon. Brighton have just equalised, Johnny, at home. Your last man standing might be okay. We'll wait and see. Simon Adingra on 77 minutes. Brighton 1, Burnley 1. Evan Ferguson still on the pitch for Brighton in that game. It's Sheffield United 1, Brentford 0. It's Wolves 1, Nottingham Forest 1. Just before the ad break, we told you that Manchester United at Old Trafford had gone 2-0 behind against Bournemouth. There has been a third goal at Old Trafford. Let's hear which way it went. Darren Stanage.
Manchester United 0, Bournemouth 3. Bournemouth with a third from a set piece, a corner that came in from the left-hand side, and there was centre-half Senesi to head the ball home. No challenge at all on him, and Manchester United completely outplayed here. United 0, Bournemouth 3.
Just kind of using
Around the break there, Keats is like, where does this put Ten Hag?
I mean, it's a pretty grim experience losing 3-0 at home to Bournemouth, and not really, to be honest, kind of deserving it.
Yeah, it's not like they've been banging on the Bournemouth door and they've been really unlucky, been hit on the counter attack a couple of times. They haven't really competed. They're keeping the ball for keeping the ball's sake. They're not looking particularly potent with it. And yeah, look, I'm not sure. I think Ten Hag has enough in the locker to get through this one. But when you look at the Bayern Munich game coming up, if they're out of the Champions League by Christmas, not going to win the Premier League.
You know, they're out of the League Cup.
Out of the league. Where does that leave them?
Yeah.
Whenever he does go, and De Zerbi, say if he's tapped up, and obviously that doesn't go on in football, but it does go on. If you're De Zerbi, then Keith, Man United come calling, what do you say?
No, you're all right. I don't want to say it's a sideward move, because United is a bigger club than Brighton. I think that's facts. But I think
it's far from straightforward. Do you know where Brighton is like?
Making a triple sub, by the way, United now. Marcus Rashford, Facundo Pellistri and Johnny Evans being emptied from the bench at Old Trafford. Luke Shaw among the players coming off in a rainy, rainy day at Old Trafford. And Anthony also coming off the pitch as well. Pellistri replacing him, but it looks like too little too late. I mean, there's 79 minutes on the clock. Manchester United, Bournemouth 3.
Not a rainy night in Soho, obviously. I don't know if you saw Nick Cave's version of the funeral, but the rainy day in Manchester, it does kind of suit this sort of mood here. 3-0 down home to Bournemouth. I mean, Ten Hag just wants to be kind of tearing his hair out, though. He's like, have we made any progress here at all? Because I don't know.
But David Connolly, like we mentioned that phrase, was it from Gary Neville, that Old Trafford is a graveyard for talent. Like, is it a graveyard for managers as well? We're not necessarily saying Ten Hag's going to lose his job today, but losing at home to Bournemouth 3-0. I mean, if you're a manager that gets approached, do you want that job?
Just quickly, right? Looking at those goals against for United, yeah. Conceded 4 against Bayern, 3 against Brighton, 3 against Galatasaray twice, 3 against City, 3 against Bournemouth today, 4 against Copenhagen. I mean, they're doing well to be where they are, considering.
How do you put that down to, David? Is that like a lack of a defensive midfielder, or what is it? Or is it Onana? Is it a lot of things?
There's obviously some multitude of things, right? I mean, I'm sure Johnny Evans, because I played with Johnny years ago at Sunday, I'm sure Johnny never thought he'd be back at United. I think he said that himself.
Yeah.
And even come to try and make a difference. I mean, geez, look, Bayern, I think, are getting smashed today. I read by like 5-1, I think, that they're losing. But anyway, they're probably going to go out of Champions League. They got Liverpool coming up. I mean, you know, in terms of from a defensive point of view, normally, you know, that would be the first thing you work off, right? Coming back to the question, if I was a manager to go manage Man United, I'd be amazed if any manager turned that down.
In fairness as well, it's like the Glazers, this, the Glazers, that, but like, they do give them money. You know, it's a massive stadium, huge support, but it's just, like, the systematic problems.
Johnny, would Ratcliffe, will he, if he has his investment, you know, sometimes you get investment at a club, right? And things change. Would that change things once he gets his 25% in? I don't know. Would it? Would that put pressure on Ten Hag? Would he want to make his own mark or bring his own man in? Or is he still not the man in charge, right? Because he's only got, you know, a quarter share. I don't know.
Man United fans, let us know what you think. 5-3-106. A little bit earlier, there was people messaging. Bobby and Castle Connell said, "Hi lads, you're being unfair on Manchester United. You have to remember they are down to 10 men. They started the mannequin Anthony Martial up top, which is quite harsh for on Anthony Martial." But there's been a number of players.
That's harsh on the mannequin. Like.
Yeah, there's been a number of players. Aoife as well is in the car. She says this is hard to listen to and hard to watch for a Manchester United fan. I don't know where they go from here, but Bayern Munich. I mean, I know Bayern are losing heavily, as you said today, but and they are already through in that Champions League group, but just doesn't bode well.
Well, just what David's saying there as well. If you're working on opposition analysis, like, and you're looking at that Man United team, the defending today and the goals are conceding with Onana's confidence, you're like, let's be having you. Like, I mean, and Bayern will be absolutely, Bayern will be 100% certain they're going to score not only once but twice in that game.
And after Ten Hag named manager of the month yesterday in the Premier League,
that's crazy.
It is a bit mad, yeah.
You couldn't write it.
Yeah.
It's insane stuff. But let us know, 53106 in the text line, what you think. If you're a Manchester United fan, it's Brighton 1, Burnley 1, Manchester United 0, Bournemouth 3, Sheffield United 1, Brentford 0, Wolves 1, Nottingham Forest 1. We have Aston Villa and Arsenal to come at 5:30.
You can just imagine Ten Hag going home today, like,
yeah,
I don't know, I presume he has a wife, whatever, and he looks at the manager of the month award. He's like, ah, here.
Football comes at you fast, life comes at you fast in two different days. Oh, it's insane. The teams are in, by the way, from the Aston Villa Arsenal game. The Aston Villa lineup is as follows: Emi Martinez in goals, the back four, Ezri Konsa, Diego Carlos, Pau Torres and Luca Dean. The midfield four, you have Leon Bailey, Kamara, Douglas Luiz and John McGinn, and Yuri Tielemans behind Ollie Watkins. Their bench, you have Matty Cash, Alex Moreno, Clément Longley, Moussa Diaby, Nicolo Zaniolo, Jean Duran, Leander Dendonker, Jacob Ramsey and Philip Marshall on the bench for Aston Villa. The Arsenal team is as follows: David Raya starts in goals, back four, Ben White, William Saliba, Gabriel and Alexander Zinchenko. The midfield three, Martin Odegaard and Kai Havertz either side of Declan Rice, and the front three, I guess you call it, Bukayo Saka out right, Gabriel Martinelli on the left, and Gabriel Jesus through the middle. The bench for Arsenal: Aaron Ramsdale, Eddie Nketiah, Jacob Kivior, Cedric Suarez, Leandro Trossard, Jorginho, Reece Nelson, Mohamed Elneny and Raheel Walters.
Head of the game in the making.
That's going to be
a game in the making, really is. I've seen very little of Villa, but like, just reading the reports, deserve to beat Man City. And Villa Park's probably a bit like Goodison in that it's an old school ground, like really, really atmospheric when they're going well, which has been pretty rare, you'd have to say. And yeah, it's going to be a cracker.
Someone's after texting in as well, lads. Which of you said Ten Hag is pulling his hair out past that stage already, I think, for Ten Hag?
Yeah, he's going to wear that Peaky Blinders hat again.
He's going to need it to hide himself. The other one tomorrow, lads, that really jumps out off the page is Spurs Newcastle. Ange Ball, this Ange Ball idea, like, that, you know, you see the result during the week, losing, having had the lead against David Moyes' West Ham, Keith. It has its advantages in that Spurs are so good to watch. But and enjoyable to watch if you're a neutral. But I'd imagine if you're a Spurs fan, you're thinking, well, why is he sticking with this playing style?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Emerson Royale and Ben Davis starting the game centre half, and you know, there's just on Doggy, I think, is very, very good going forward. I think there's a few question marks of him going backwards, and it just seems to me like Christian Romero, you know, the Spurs fans keep telling me he's a very, very good centre-half. He's brilliant for Argentina. I get that he is brilliant for Argentina, but I just think there's a howler in him. I think if you rough him up the South American style, he can sort of just get a little bit hot-headed and easily take a red card. I think he's one that can be wound up. And look, there's an awful lot of injuries, a whole host of injuries. I think Ange Postecoglou to just say, listen, this is the way we play. I get that, because you look at Manchester United today, there's no DNA. You don't know which way they're going to play. There's no style, but you know what you're getting from Spurs now. You know which way they're going to turn up. You know which way they're going to play. It's all action. I think it's brilliant. I love watching it. I'm just delighted Arsenal aren't doing it, because my heart is in my mouth when they're trying to play out. And look, like I say, it's brilliant, but if I was a Spurs fan, I think I would be pulling my hair out watching this, because defensively, like, they look like they've been coached just saying, when we don't have the ball, go and run to the halfway line and try and catch everybody offside. And look, the people say to me, oh, it nearly worked against Chelsea. Chelsea went through about four or five times before they actually hit the back of the net. So that, for me, could have been, listen, lads, drop back. And I've been in teams where he said, if we drop down to 10 men, we're still going to have a go. But having a go doesn't mean standing on the halfway line. And look, the sound bites are brilliant. It doesn't matter if we 5 men, we're still going to have a go. That's a great sound bite, but very, very naive as well. Really naive in the Premier League. And look, I don't want to say the wheels are falling off and it's gotten Spursy, because I know they've a lot of injuries, and when they all come back, I think they will hit a bit of a rhythm again. But for me, certain, you know, Manchester City can say, we're playing this way and that is it. I think other teams have to be a little bit more pragmatic. You know, if that's how he wants to play 90% of the time, that's no problem. But I do think there's little tweaks needed from everybody. You know, I think there's only Manchester City can say, that's what we do. Everybody else has to sort of take the opposition into account.
The one thing you'd say, just, I was watching it the other night, and like, West Ham absolutely parked the bus and won all, and that was fine. But like, so Spurs are like, maybe their confidence a little bit, like, they're like, we should be winning this game. Maybe mentally they're not fully there. What was the back pass from Destiny about, though? Like, I mean, it was literally no pressure at all. Like, he had three touches of the ball. The keeper comes out then. For me, the keeper has to kick it. Comes out and decides to kind of palm it with his hands. And then, I was like, Ward-Prowse is just like, literally can't believe this. Obviously misses the first chance. But it was a terrible, terrible goal to give away at a time when 1-1 wouldn't have been a disaster. Like, wouldn't even be a great result. West Ham are quite good. I thought they were I thought their defensive structure, I don't know if you were watching, Keith, but like the way they set up defensively, as much as it was kind of like old school, very, very hard to break down. But when you can see the goal like that, you're just like, this is carnage. Like,
but yeah, but again, West Ham, we all know what West Ham are going to do. They're going to drop into a mid to low block. They're going to make it really difficult. They'll give up the channels. They'll let you play the ball out of the channels. They're not going to
come
and engage.
Keep clearing it in the box.
Just keep clearing the ball. You know, it wasn't getting thrown down their throats. They weren't just saying, right, let's just keep putting it in, keep putting it in with quality. And eventually, you know, the manager's going to say, stop letting the ball come into the box, and you start to play from there. But Spurs just have this, we're going to force it. If you clog up the middle of that pitch and you make it really difficult and he can't play through, I don't see a problem solver to say, listen, that's not working, let's get it out wide and see if we can move them around another way. It just seems to be, let's keep doing it. And look, there's players like Giovanni Lo Celso, brilliant football. He's playing in a holding midfield position. Yeah. How many times is he looking over his shoulder to worry about what's happening? And people diving in on the halfway line, like the ball's getting fizzed into the opposition strikers. And rather than staying behind the strikers and saying, right, I'll just make them play backwards, it's like they've been told, go and try and win the ball. Go through them, see what you can do. And they're getting rolled left, right and centre. It's kamikaze stuff. Brilliantly entertaining, but kamikaze.
I felt as well, just watching on TV, like there's a lot has been made of the stadium and the atmosphere in it. And I think JD has spoken about having been there, and it's an amazing atmosphere. You didn't get the feeling from the Spurs crowd at all that they felt they were going to get out of the game. It just looked like the confidence has kind of been drained out of them. Speaking of which, a minute and a half to go in Old Trafford,
and a lot of empty seats, a lot of people have left, and Eric Ten Hag cutting a very forlorn figure in the touchline as fans stream out of the turnstiles at Old Trafford. David, on that game during the week, Tottenham West Ham, like what were your takeaways from it, from either a Tottenham perspective or West Ham, your old club?
Yeah, I thought Tottenham were brilliant first half. Probably could have maybe had that game wrapped up. At half time, you might say, would he be saying to them, you know, geez, West Ham they're not gonna be as bad as that in the second half, expect a response. But it looked like they just were not expecting a response. I thought West Ham were excellent. As the lads have said, you know, they made their own downfall in terms of the mistakes at the back. But I thought West Ham were really, really good second half. Like, really good. Because first half, they were dreadful. And obviously, Moyes has gone in there and read them the right act, probably. I don't know if Ange does that, but Moyes certainly would have done. And, you know, that was a brilliant 3 points for them. Like, excellent 3 points. Really pleased for lads like, you know, Jared Bowen, James Ward-Prowse, you know, honest, hard-working lads. You know, performing brilliantly. So that excellent second half from them. Absolutely, really, really good.
The left back as well, David, I hadn't seen much of, thought he was absolutely outstanding. Like, really, really worked his... Spurs could have been there for another hour and I wouldn't have fancied him to score.
Yeah. One thing you say, because a lot of West Ham fans sometimes are not too happy with Moyes and, you know, what he's doing. You know, this, that, and the other. I know they have sometimes the results and the football, you can say what you want, but I go back to last season, right? Because I worked on Brighton West Ham last season, yeah? And Brighton absolutely blew West Ham away, ripped them to pieces. David Moyes on the side did not know how to play against De Zerbi ball. You contrast that with the next time they played them at Brighton. They sat in. They broke play up. They had more Prowse, don't get me wrong, but it was a completely different game. So it's like they learned. And I think that's a sign of a good manager, you know, that he's still learning and he wasn't going to get beat the same way by Brighton. So, I mean, David Moyes is, you know, how many games he's got in the Premier League? Say what you want. I mean, you know, people obviously have really high expectations, sometimes unrealistic expectations for them and for West Ham. But I think now with the likes of James Ward-Prowse and Pakatar, and they've got some real quality in that team, you know. So they're going to have another solid.
Here we go.
It's four nil Bournemouth.
I was going to say the contrast between Liverpool were score with 10 minutes to go in injury time, really, really pressing for a third goal today. Diaz very unlucky to be called offside. Man United at 3-0 down here, looked like they just wanted to end. It's now four.
This is all of a sudden a scoreline, because sometimes a scoreline can get a manager sacked. You know, I was at Old Trafford when Liverpool beat them 5-0 that day, and I remember thinking, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer wasn't sacked immediately after that game, but I remember thinking, this could be this could be it, because I think it was 4-0 at halftime, but 4-0 at home to Bournemouth, Keith, is that could be fatal.
Yeah, I think it will be fatal. I don't think he will get sacked straight away, but like I said, I think with the Champions League coming on top, playing
it's
against
Maguire
Liverpool
as well. Sorry, Keith, Maguire loses
so,
the ball.
So bad.
Amrabat is running down his right wing towards his own goal, cuts inside the pitch and then plays this flimsy ball inside. Yeah. Just put your foot through it.
Yeah.
The game's nearly over. You're still trying to play out in the back and now you're 4-0 down.
I actually don't think XG would be an awful lot different to the scoreline here, funnily enough.
Yeah, possibly not. But like again, the goalkeeper
might look for a handball there. I don't know if there's any consolation to Man United fans. Yeah, there's a suspicion of handball.
If you're Amrabat, like, don't get me wrong, I think he's a really good player. I fell in love with him when he played for Morocco in the World Cup. But you're on the edge of your own 18-yard box in the last 2 or 3 minutes of the game, you're 3-0 down, you look inside the pitch, there's 3 Bournemouth players and one of your players, and you decide, I'm going to try and fizz it in there. Well, what are you trying to prove in the 94th minute of the game when you're 3-0 down?
The one thing I would say, though, Maguire wasn't actually under massive pressure at the time. They're going to have a look at this. But Maguire, I thought Maguire was actually very poor there. It shouldn't be a handball, but he might give it. It comes off his hand, but he doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah, it's hard to know. Dangu Ouattara with the goal.
Literally has no idea what he's doing here.
Hit his chest and then hits his hand. Yeah. That can't be a handball. You know, it might, I say, get out of jail. 3-0, 4-0. Who
Ironic
cares,
cheers if they...
No goal handball.
That's just the most ridiculous interpretation of what a handball is in football. He literally has no idea what he's doing. He's flailing to get to the ball. Comes off his chest onto his hand.
Yeah.
He's hurdled on Anna, so his hands are like sort of flailing in, and then it does. It hits his stomach and then hits his hand. But for me, that's not handball. It just is not handball. But it's probably a get out of jail free card for the referee. Is the fact that it's 3-0, the game's over.
Yeah, it doesn't matter ultimately.
Say it's not a goal, and who cares? Move on.
Yeah, that's insane. So yeah, a reprieve for Manchester United, if you can call it that. They'll only lose 3-0 now at home to Bournemouth, which is, an indictment of the state of affairs there. Brighton 1, Burnley 0, 7 minutes into added time.
Do you know what? If there's a WhatsApp group among players, Bournemouth are going to be like, the Saturday night, they were actually very easy to play against. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't like one of these smash and grab 3-0s. We were very comfortable here.
Yeah, 100%. There's no fear.
Yeah, but it's like you said, Johnny, when you try and put yourself into the opposition analyst and you talk about Manchester United, you're thinking, how are we going to play against them? Well, you can pass it around at the back, you can fizz it into midfield because nobody really gets after you. Maybe when you get over the halfway line, 20 yards inside their half, McTominay, Amrabat will start trying to rat around. But generally, Marcus Rashford, Martial, Garnacho, Bruno Fernandes, they don't exactly break their back trying to get the ball back off you. So United, I think every team that he plays against them will say, That was a nice game, didn't it?
I'm hoping we have the volume for the final whistle, because it'll be interesting.
The boos and jeers and all the rest. Yeah, 20 seconds left in that game, but we are pretty much out of time and off the ball Saturday this afternoon. David Connolly on the line. Thanks a million for hopping on as usual, David.
Big lads, take care.
Christoph and Keith Tracy and Johnny Ward in studio with myself. Thanks a million, lads, for popping in. Not a good afternoon for Manchester United fans. Manchester United 0, Bournemouth 3 at Old Trafford. Final whistle just about to go in that one. Brighton 1, Burnley 1, 8 minutes into added time in that game. It is Sheffield United 1, Brentford 0, 6 minutes into added time in that match. And they're 4 minutes into added time in Molineux. It's Wolves 1, Nottingham Forest 1, Crystal Palace 1, Liverpool 2. The full-time score from a little bit earlier on today. But this could be fatal for Erik ten Hag. We'll wait and see. But of course, they have the Bayern Munich game to come on Tuesday night. Aston Villa versus Arsenal getting underway at 5:30. And upcoming tomorrow on the show and off the ball, 1 o'clock to 7 o'clock, Joe Malloy in the hot seat. We will have live and exclusive commentary of La Rochelle versus Leinster in the Investec European Champions Cup. 3:15 p.m. Irish time kickoff for that one at the Stade Marcel de Flange. Johnny Murphy with Ciarán O'Flaherty on commentary for us on that one. We'll also have Premier League comms as well. We'll pick up on Tottenham Hotspur versus Newcastle, Stephen Doyle and Vinnie Perth on that one. Updates from Glen versus Scotstown in the Ulster Senior Football Championship club semi-final at the Athletic Grounds in Armagh, and the paper review as well from 1:30 with Cliona Foley and Kieran Cunningham. We'll speak to you tomorrow on off the ball. Good luck.
Spurs versus Newcastle United, live from Tottenham Hotspur Stadium,
on off the ball
with William Hill, bringing you an epic weekend of Premier League football. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.